B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017. And borrowing a page from my friends at Project Censored, Mickey Huff and Peter Phillips, your humble host is declaring a truth emergency in the U.S. of A. today. It's dizzying because we are so disconnected from reality. And don't take it from me. We all know that Trump is a little loose with the facts, right? He's got alternative facts, and when those don't work, he just uses bullshit. But the Wall Street Journal, which has to be the most friendly newspaper in the country toward Donald Trump's business policies, his intentions to lower the corporate tax rate, and do all kinds of favors by rolling back regulations, including on Wall Street, the Journal today published a critical editorial saying that he clings to falsehoods like a drunk to an empty gin bottle. The editorial, quote, 2 months into his presidency, Gallup has Trump's approval rating at 39%. No doubt Trump considers that fake news, but if he doesn't show more respect for the truth, most Americans may conclude he's a fake president. Yeah, the boy who cried wolf. Will we believe Donald Trump when the shit really hits the fan? And Trump is not the only one who's playing fast and loose with the facts. I want you to listen because I'm going to play a couple of clips from my television news gathering last night. And you'll get an idea of what I consume on a daily basis. Rachel Maddow continues her reporting on the Russia-Trump connections. And some of them are disgusting and fascinating all at the same time. The business deals with the oligarch who's getting divorced, and he overpaid Trump for a mansion in Florida by, what, $40, $50 million? There are a lot of questions that have been raised. But taking questions and linking them to assertions that remain unproven is a very dangerous way to practice what some people call journalism. And so Rachel Maddow last night did her recap of the timeline of the Russia-Trump connections, the claims of Russian hacking that affected our election, and she treats as fact the flimsy reports that are completely unsubstantiated that were issued by our intelligence community in October and then this past January. And I want you to listen carefully. This clip is less than a minute. And Maddow recaps some of the reporting that she's been doing. And she rolls it forward based on information about Russia's use of Twitter bots. And these are pieces of software that can detect when somebody posted a critical comment about Trump, and then it would tweet out at that person false information about Hillary or something flattering about Trump. Now, we did see a lot of bot activity, and it was mostly favoring the Trump campaign. But Rachel never bothers to note that there was a very active disinformation campaign underway by the Clinton team and the dark money super PAC called Correct the Record, run by David Brock. But listen, as she recaps her narrative and treats speculation as fact. Here we go, Rachel.
So again, timeline here, February, Kremlin threatening slash promising that they're going nuclear in their information war. March, their GRU attacks the Democratic Party and steals all their data.
That assertion is based on an assessment by the CIA. It is not a fact. But she doesn't say in her narrative there that this is a perhaps or alleged or reported. It just is.
See all the fruits of that by the summer. But that spring, April and May, the other thing that they started doing was a huge industrial-sized bot attack. This was not a joke. They used automated social media bots and what appeared to be paid operatives in Russia and other countries, specifically to target Bernie supporters.
Now, you just heard her say Russia and other countries. And in this next clip, I've edited these together. She is going to actually say that it came from not Russia, but listen.
When John Mattis, the administrator on that Bernie site in San Diego, when John Mattis started tracking down the site's domain registrations, the trail led to places like Macedonia and Albania.
Okay, those are not in Russia. Does anybody need a geography refresher? And so there is no check or balance. There is no one there to say, hey, Rachel, I think you're reaching there. I think you're exaggerating. I think you are, leaning out over a cliff where you have no supporting evidence. And this is going on a daily basis. Rachel Maddow's ratings are at an all-time high. And many people who I know and respect watch her every night, and they might be a little bit skeptical of what they're seeing. They might say, oh gosh, I'm not quite catching any proof about that. But by and large, the repetition, what George W. Bush called catapulting the propaganda, is very effective. And you've got people like me, Robert Perry, a handful of other critical commentators, Glenn Greenwald, who are saying, wait a minute. I do not love Russia, and I know Russia's riddled with corruption, and Putin is a bad guy. And as you're going to hear in a moment, there are more ties between Trump individuals, Trump associates, and Russia. But we do not have any proof. And just as Trump lies, we have competing fact-free narratives offered from other quarters. Now, here's the other example. My routine is when I go home while I'm fixing dinner, I flip on the DVR and I watch the public television news hour. And then we take a break during dinner, and after dinner is when I typically watch the other cable news programs that are in my diet. And I was really struck as I watched the news hour last night because they were talking about Trump's new announced ban on laptop computers, but only for people who are flying nonstop from 10 foreign countries, all Muslim, primarily Muslim population countries. And so the NewsHour trotted out a guy named Matthew Olson. He's now at Harvard, but he was Barack Obama's director of the National Counterterrorism Center. And I want you to listen as he offers speculative commentary on whether there's actually new intelligence to support this new security measure. And he asserts that there is new information, but in almost the second breath, he says, of course, I don't know, we're concerned about possibilities, it would appear, it may well come to light. Listen to the weasel words that Matthew Olson is allowed to use on PBS unchallenged.
The story.
Passengers flying out of these airports can no longer take large electronic devices, things like laptops or mobile gaming devices or tablets, on board with them. Those devices have to be in checked luggage only. Cell phones are still allowed on board. The new restrictions apply to flights from 10 specific airports in Jordan, Egypt, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Morocco.
Is at the earliest possible stage where you can have intelligence that allows you to identify a particular context. Increased concern about the fear that almost certainly there's some.
But they included some different airports in their ban. We turn now to Matthew Olson for more on this. He was the director of the National Counterterrorism Center during the Obama administration, and he now teaches at Harvard University. Welcome. I wonder if you could just tell me a little bit, what is going on here?
Well, it would appear that almost certainly there's some new intelligence that the intelligence community has gathered, whether on its own or from one of our partners in the region, that has given the government, in particular the Department of Homeland Security, increased concern about the possibility that a terrorist organization has developed some type of bomb that it can hide in a device like a laptop.
He offers no evidence,
you know,
here.
Whether that's
pure speculation.
Brand new intelligence or maybe just new analysis of existing intelligence.
See,
it's
he doesn't
hard to
know.
Say, but certainly there's some new piece of information that has given the government more cause for concern in this.
So he says, certainly there is new information, after he just spent 30 seconds telling you that there might be new information, it might be based on old information, certainly this, certainly that. I mean, come on. This is not definitive commentary. This is bullshit.
In this particular context, the way this information may well come to light is a number of ways. One is through intercept of communications between terrorists talking about something like this.
It may.
It could come from
it might.
Our allies in the region and their intelligence sources, whether those are electronic surveillance or come from electronic surveillance or from human sources. But certainly there's some new information from one of these types of sources that then gets put into the system here.
Certainly there is.
And analysts go over it and they compare it to what we know from the past and come up with a judgment that then is supplied to the Department of Homeland Security, which ultimately makes the decision about what limitations to enforce on planes bound for the U.S.
Here's one more.
You know, the United Kingdom and the United States work incredibly closely together on all these types of issues and share intelligence. It certainly suggests to me, at least, that the UK and the US are in lockstep in how they're reading whatever new information there may be that has caused this concern.
So whatever new information there may be, these are weasel words. He doesn't have a shred of proof about what he described, and in a 5.5-minute interview, the NewsHour allowed him to treat speculation as fact in three different passages there. Then, on the way to work this morning, I have Rush Limbaugh on the radio, and he says to look at the Daily Mail, the London tabloid, because it's the only paper in the world that's reporting the truth, and that is that in January, Trump authorized the raid in Yemen, where dozens of innocent people were killed, including an American citizen, a daughter of Anwar al-Awlaki. And we're told that they got great intelligence from there. Well, based on that assertion, with no evidence, the Daily Mail says the move is allegedly based on the suspicion that Islamic State are working on ways to smuggle explosives onto planes by hiding them in electronics. Crucial information was apparently gathered during a raid against al-Qaeda in Yemen in January that killed Navy SEAL Ryan Owens. The intelligence centered around al-Qaeda's, quote, successful development, they don't say who they're quoting, of compact battery bombs that fit inside laptops or other devices. Now, this is a well-placed leak. Once again, there is no information here, but it's coming from somebody who would benefit from the perception that Trump's raid was a success last January. And the flimsy evidence they offer is that in October of 15, there was a failed attempt to bring down a jet that had taken off from Mogadishu, Somalia, and that there was a laptop with, instead of a battery, a bomb in it. And the bomb didn't detonate properly. It killed the guy who was carrying it and blew him out the window, but nobody else was killed. So we have a single event a year and a half ago that appears to have triggered this bizarre new security protocol, which, of course, since we know what 10 airports laptops cannot be brought into the cabin from, if I'm Joe Jihad, I'm going to fly out of Frankfurt or Zurich or Milan or Rome or Madrid or maybe Toronto. But I've got a list of the 10 cities where I am not going to attempt to board a plane and produce some sort of mayhem. So this makes absolutely no sense. And it is all based on falsehoods, disinformation, spin, and well-placed leaks. Now to a think piece in today's New York Times entitled Why People Continue to Believe Objectively False Things. And they rely on James Comey, who is hardly a credible actor in our current theatrics in Washington. And they quote him as saying that, I have no information that supports the tweets from Trump that Obama ordered wiretaps on Trump Tower and the Trump campaign. Now, we are told that this is fully debunked. And this article kind of talks about the way partisan polarization has led people to a confirmation bias. They seek out information that fits the story they want to believe. And this is a serious problem in the United States, and the New York Times and the corporate media are main contributors to it. And the article talks about different myths that have been promoted, like the birther myth and other stories that have come and gone, and how they often linger in the minds of certain people. And relating to the claim by Trump that Obama had him wiretapped, they write, rather than focusing on the wiretap allegation, Republicans have sought to portray the House Intelligence Committee hearings on Russian interference in the election as an investigation into leaks of classified information. And get how this article ends. With a very strong, opinionated conclusion. The question of whether Obama wiretapped Trump has now been answered clearly and strongly in the negative. But the myth and its effects seem likely to continue unless Republicans denounce it more forcefully. Now, their claims are based on comments from James Comey and the NSA director Mike Rogers. People who are paid to lie. And Comey refused to answer most of the questions that he was peppered with at the hearing on Monday. But keep in mind, you just heard the definitive assertion from the New York Times that all of that is debunked. And now here comes Devin Nunes, the Republican chair of the House Intelligence Committee. He's been carrying water for Trump, and he's got another bucket for us today. He said that American intelligence agencies monitoring foreign officials may have incidentally picked up communications of Trump transition team members. And the White House is now using that as evidence that Trump was right. Now, this is simply more speculation, perhaps informed by intelligence or leaks. We can't be sure because Nunes isn't really telling us. Here's a longer quote. On numerous occasions, the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition. Details about U.S. persons, details associated with the incoming administration, details with little or no apparent foreign intelligence value were widely disseminated in intelligence community reporting. Now, this is pretty inflammatory. He's making these claims, and again, he's not telling us. The next paragraph reads, Nunes declined to say where he learned of the surveillance. But he said none of the information collected had anything to do with the FBI's investigation into the links between the Trump campaign and Russia. Nunes, I want to be clear. None of this surveillance was related to Russia or the investigation of activities. Now, we know about incidental collection, right? They claim that they always follow the rules, and when they capture a U.S. person, they mask that person's identity, and then they create a transcript. But they don't mask the comments that who was that masked man? So this is a game that is being played. And I've said this before. Trump could clear this up in a hot New York minute by just declassifying the critical information that is being randomly or wantonly leaked. And here's a red herring just to get you going. ABC News reported today that Trump Tower was in fact wiretapped. For 2 years, ending in 2013, the FBI had a court-approved warrant to eavesdrop on a sophisticated Russian organized crime money laundering network that operated three floors below the Trump penthouse suite at Trump Tower in Unit 63A. And the suspects included a guy with a long Russian name. Let me give it a try. Tokunov. And he's a major player, according to an FBI agent who's quoted here. He has extremely good connections in the business world as well as the criminal world. And because of his status, they kept tabs on his activities. But the FBI investigation did not implicate Trump. We know that he has done deals with sordid characters, many who are part of criminal enterprises in other parts of the world, and allegedly some in New York City as well. So, because Trump is tainted by these deals, it makes it easier for a lot of people to accept the unsubstantiated claims that are being spewed and spun in the corporate media today. And I, for one, am just demanding some basic facts. Let's start with some facts, and then we can speculate more from there. Now, here's inconvenient information surfacing from an investigation by the Associated Press. Paul Manafort, who was Trump's campaign manager in between Corey Lewandowski and the Bannon-Conway team, well, he secretly worked for a Russian oligarch, and for $10 million a year, billionaire Oleg Deripaska, a close ally of Putin, was paying Paul Manafort. And according to the report here, the information was, or the focus of the deal was, that Manafort was to help influence politicians, the media, and business relationships in the U.S. and Europe. Now, Manafort, we know, worked for Viktor Yanukovych in Ukraine, and Yanukovych was an ally of Putin. But this deal does put Manafort much more closely in league with the Kremlin, and it is troubling. We deserve to know the truth about it. But Rachel Maddow is not delivering the truth. She's delivering a narrative that is based on speculation and assertions. And that's why I have such a problem with it. My pal David K. Johnston, the Pulitzer Prize winner who used to work for the New York Times, he's the one who received Trump's 2005 tax return summary pages at his home mailbox last week, took it on the Rachel Maddow show, and she kind of overplayed her hand on that. Well, Johnston is in an op-ed today in The Guardian saying we need to see the rest of Trump's 2005 return and all of his other tax returns and complete tax returns going back to the 1970s. Without them, we have, Johnston says, no way of knowing whether he's a crook or compromised by his extensive dealings with Russian oligarchs, with authoritarian regimes in Azerbaijan, the Philippines, and Turkey, or by massive loans from a bank owned by the Chinese government and the Trump Tower space rented by its largest tenant, Industrial and Commercial Bank of China. And David K. Johnston is the real deal. He's been digging into Trump's murky dealings for over 25 years. And I have deep respect for him, and I agree. Trump's tax returns would go a long way toward helping us understand all of these swirling allegations and counter-allegations that are polluting our atmosphere and our minds these days. Meanwhile, Rexxon Tillerson, former CEO of ExxonMobil, and he turns out to have been surprised by Trump asking him to become the Secretary of State. Well, he's pissing a lot of people off because he announced that he's going to skip the April 5th talks in Brussels between foreign ministers of NATO, and instead he's going to visit Moscow. Oh, he's also going to attend talks at Mar-a-Lago with the Chinese Premier Xi Jinping. Now, Tillerson is a guy who has been basically silent since he took office. He held a news conference in Asia last week, but no American reporters had traveled with him there. And he appears to be, as Jonathan Friedland writes in an op-ed at The Guardian today, out of the loop and out of his depth. And he told in the one interview that he's given to an obscure independent journal review, he said, I didn't want this job. I didn't seek it. He was stunned when Trump offered it, and he only did it because my wife told me I'm supposed to do this. Now, that is a dedicated public servant, isn't it? And Friedland says this could be a coded admission that he knows he's not qualified to be Secretary of State, that he's in way over his head. Later, he says, in Washington terms, the once mighty fossil fuel CEO looks both out of the loop and out of his depth. He doesn't realize that his new bosses are the U.S. taxpayers. He doesn't understand the basic democratic structure. And so I think it's an interesting piece. I've linked to it so you can read it for yourselves. Every day I pause for a second to thank the people who support my work with your subscriptions to the Peter B. Collins podcast, like Judy Holloway, Linda Gray, Craig Balog, Steve Wozenski. Thank you for your support. I do appreciate it. And if that is an indication for you to take the cue, Come on over to peterbcollins.com, click on the menu button, pull it down, click on Become a Subscriber, takes you to the sign-up page. And I do have a new bonus book that I'll be adding soon, Thomas Frank's Listen Liberal. I've got 5 copies of that for new annual subscribers to the Peter B. Collins podcast. Well, we've done it again, an air raid in Syria aimed at the rebels in Raqqa. Hit a school where civilians had taken shelter. And we know at least 30 civilians were killed. And the big question here is, has Trump lifted some of the restrictions on the rules of engagement for the U.S. military and said, we don't care what happens, just bomb the shit out of the Islamic State? Maybe that was the secret plan that we are still waiting for details on. And I woke up to the news from London this morning that there was an attack on Parliament being treated as a terrorist event. Apparently 4 people now reported dead, 20 are injured. Around 2 in the afternoon, a driver of a large vehicle mowed down pedestrians on Westminster Bridge, where I have cavorted and taken pictures, killing 2 people and injuring others before crashing into a railing. And then one man left the vehicle, approached the Parliament, pulled out a knife, stabbed an armed police officer, and then was fatally shot. So 2 people killed by the car and the assailant, and a cop killed in the knife attack. And certainly this is going to be used to raise more hysterical alarms about threats against the United States that, in my view, are quite remote. Tomorrow, the Republicans are threatening to hold their vote on repealing and replacing Obamacare. The package that they have put on the that isn't on the floor yet but is expected to be there tomorrow is a mess. And so is the vote count. According to the Washington Post, there are 6 senators who are currently opposed to the package. Their vote doesn't count till it gets there. But the Republicans can only afford to lose 22 votes in the House, assuming all Democrats vote against the measure. And they have 24 who stated that they're opposed right now. And there are another 25 who are leaning against it. So they've got a lot of wrangling and what do they call it? Whipping. They got to whip those votes. Whip it good. Maybe they'll bring Devo in to try to accomplish that. But it could be a huge miscalculation. They may lose the vote and then have to start all over again. The confirmation hearing for Judge Neil Gorsuch to take a seat on the Supreme Court is proceeding. It is the same dance. I give credit to Dianne Feinstein, a senator from California, who asked him some tough questions today about his involvement in the torture regime of the Bush administration. And Pat Leahy also joined in on that area of inquiry. But this guy Gorsuch is really good. He just deflects everything. He never really answers a question in a substantive way. And the most significant thing that's been raised so far are his ties to the Denver billionaire Phil Anschutz. And Gorsuch was an attorney for Anschutz. Anschutz was the guy who lobbied the White House to put Gorsuch on the appeals court. And he wouldn't directly answer whether he would recuse himself from any case involving the interests of Phil Anschutz. And that's a red flag. We've seen Clarence Thomas, who benefited from the work of the Citizens United PAC and then voted in favor of the Citizens United decision on the court. Also, Thomas worked for Monsanto, but that hasn't stopped him from participating and voting on measures that affect his former employer. And here's a real interesting and bizarre moment. We know on Monday that as Comey and Rogers were testifying, Trump was tweeting, and a member of the House, a Democrat, I think his name is Himes, got the FBI director to respond to Trump's inaccurate tweets or claimed inaccurate tweets. So this was a really strange episode where Twitter played a role in this congressional hearing in real time. Well, today, Judge Gorsuch was asked to defend a ruling that he made against an autistic student. And he said, well, You know, they were asking for reimbursement under a federal law. He just applied a standard set out in the Supreme Court decision. And it turns out that at the same time that he was defending his decision against this autistic student, the Supreme Court overruled his decision right while he was sitting there. And Chief Justice Roberts said, when all is said and done, a student offered an educational program providing merely more than de minimis progress from year to year can hardly be said to have been offered an education at all. So I haven't really absorbed this whole ruling, but that's a pretty strong statement in the Supreme Court decision, which was a slap at Judge Gorsuch. Isn't that interesting? A couple of quickies before I go, and I have to tell you, there's so much news today that I had to leave several stories out, some that I hope to catch up with in the next couple of days. On this program in the past, Nick Bryant has helped us understand pedophiles. And Jeffrey Epstein is a convicted billionaire money manager who had a weakness for young girls. And he got caught, but he got off really light. He was given a jail term, but he was allowed to spend it at the county jail, and he only showed up there to sleep at night. Well, it's been alleged that Epstein sexually abused more than 40 minor girls. Donald Trump knows Epstein, calls him a terrific guy, saying he's a lot of fun to be with. It's even said he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side. Well, this now implicates the second nominee for Labor Secretary on the Trump wrecking crew, former Miami U.S. Attorney Alexander Acosta. And he led the team that cut the deal, the federal deal, with Jeffrey Epstein that let him get off with a 13-month sentence. He had to pay some restitution, and he does have to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life. But other individuals who commit the same crime would serve much longer sentences and wouldn't be allowed to be on work release. So this is going to be a serious negative for Mr. Acosta, a law school dean, and we'll see if the Democrats are able to make any real traction from it. Secret Service is requesting an additional $60 million a year in funding to cover the costs of security for Trump and his family. Almost $27 million of that is just to protect Trump Tower. And Trump hasn't been there that I know of since he was inaugurated. He spends his time at the White House and Mar-a-Lago or one of his other properties. And Melania and the young Baron are holed up there. And we have to spend $27 million to protect them. And many people on my Facebook page have properly noted that Meals on Wheels could be funded with the money that is spent on Trump security. Many other of the elements proposed for cuts in the Trump budget, which really benefit many people who have nothing else, are going to be losers, so we can pay for the security for the big loser named Trump. Damage control at Uber, as the females on the board and in upper management got on a conference call with reporters yesterday, led by Arianna Huffington. Now, I've been exposed to Huffington since the 1990s, when she was a conservative Republican supporting her gay husband's run, that's Michael Huffington, for the U.S. Senate here in California. And she's a real chameleon. And now she is trying to defend Travis Kalanick from the sexism claims, from all of the criticism of his arrogant and aggressive management style. And the question came up, is this board sufficiently independent to fire Travis Kalanick? And Arianna, in her lovely accent, I won't attempt to mimic it, said it's clear that both Uber and the entire ride-sharing industry would not be what we are today without Travis. And they haven't even considered bouncing him from his job. And finally, you can say goodbye to Sears and Kmart. Oh, it'll take a while to wind down their retail operations, but they threw up the white flag today in a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission. In the past year, they had to cover $2.2 billion in losses from selling the Craftsman brand to Black & Decker and other emergency measures. And their long-term debt is $4.2 billion. And I just have to tell you, we bought a new mattress and box spring from Sears last September, and it was a nightmare because they no longer have their own delivery operation. They subbed it out to a contractor who's just awful and, you know, very difficult to deal with. And I had lovely words with my Sears store manager, who acknowledged the mess that he has on a daily basis. The business has been hollowed out because of their losses, and a great American brand, Sears is over 100 years old, will be shutting down sooner or later. And part of my connection is, you know, I worked in Chicago at the radio stations that were named for Sears, WLS. The call letter stood for World's Largest Store. Thanks for listening to my news and comment podcast. It's free, and it's available every day on YouTube. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.